Okay. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the July 12, 2021 Ashland Senior Advisory Committee, ASAC, general meeting. This is our bi-monthly meeting, and welcome all. First on our agenda is approval of minutes. We had minutes from the May 3rd, 2021 meeting. And I asked for an approval of those minutes.
I move to approve the minutes.
And do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, you can raise your hand for aye.
Aye.
Okay. Minutes are
approved. Some people are muted. Can they unmute?
Actually, I think Kathy is talking on her phone, so it shows she's muted, but I don't think she is. And I'm not
but sure. There we go.
Well, I mean, I've got background noise. I think it's better if I stay muted unless I want to speak.
Yeah. I have a quick question on who seconded. Sorry, the motion. Thank you, Anne.
All right. I have no additions or deletions to the agenda for today. Unless I see any hands rising up, I will assume that we're good to go and go on to public input. Now, go ahead, Eileen.
I was just going to let people know that Deborah told us she'll be able to join us at 4 p.m. I want to make sure all the members knew that.
Sure.
And there's Steph.
So, hi, Steph. Do we have people signed up for public input?
No signups for public input, no. And we are expecting Steve Mariaco.
Yes.
I doubt he expected us to be at that point in the agenda quite this fast. Let me try to alert him.
Sure.
I'm sorry, is Steve associated with Southern Oregon ICC? Because that is showing up in the waiting room.
I don't know.
Yeah, he probably is. That's probably International Code Council.
Okay.
So. I'll admit that person then.
Okay, that's all set.
Perfect. And when he comes on, Eileen, I'll let you do the introduction.
Okay. Steve, if that is you who has just joined us with your video off, we are ready for your portion of the agenda. There is Steve. Okay, he was probably just renaming himself. Hi, Steve, if you would unmute. Hi, Steve, welcome. We didn't recognize you. Sorry, we kept you in the waiting room. We didn't recognize your Zoom identity. Welcome to ASAC. Michael Gardner, our chair, has asked me to introduce you. We're ready for your presentation if you are ready.
Okay, great.
I will just introduce you. Steve Mariaco is the building official for the city of Ashland, and he is part of the community development department. And he is here to do some follow-up to the discussion that we had a few months ago regarding age-friendly housing and what the city is doing toward that. And we had the question about, well, if somebody wants to stay in their home, it needs to make some adaptations to be able to age in place. How difficult is that given the city's process? And so Steve has prepared a nice presentation and gave us a lot of handouts in our package. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Steve.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Eileen, for the nice introduction. As Eileen mentioned, my name is Steve Mariaco. I'm your building official for the city of Ashland. And I'm just gonna go ahead and kind of give you guys some scenarios, you know, that you might come across for doing the aging in place, addition, remodel type situations. So what we've done is we put together four different scenarios. One's just your basic run of the mill, just adding a ramp just to get access into the home. Another one, we've done a bathroom remodel. That could include widening a door, just a total new remodel for, you know, changing out all the fixtures, doing a roll-in shower, a new toilet and sink, finishes everything. And then we've done another scenario that has a two complete bathroom remodel, and then another one that has an addition, a full 500 square foot master bedroom and bathroom addition. So just kind of quick little disclaimer here. So building permit fees, such as structural permit, structural plan check, fire plan check, community development fee, engineering fees, these are all fees that are going to be calculated off of a set fee table based on valuations of the project. And for these project valuations provided for this presentation, they're not going to actually reflect actual costs of constructions for these types of projects. And the valuations provided, they have been inflated to provide worst case scenarios for permit fees. Reason being, I don't know what the costs are going to be for you. They could be all over the board depending on your finishes, the contractor you're choosing. Right now we're seeing a real high markups in materials over the last year as well. So just really wanted to inflate those price as to not give you, you know, some false, you know, permit fee numbers. And so as we go through here, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen if I can, kind of go over these slides. And I apologize, Eileen, I realized that one of these, the first sheet is a little erroneous, but I made some markups to where mine are going to reflect what they are. As you see on some of the other ones, I made markouts, but this one, for some reason, they didn't save. So they had different numbers. I was working off of a permit or Intergov system. And so they had some fees that I had to kind of go and work in there that weren't part of this. So I've corrected on this slide. The rest of them are all correct though. So for this first situation, can you see my hand? My screen sharing okay with you guys?
We can't see your screen yet, Steve.
Oh, okay. Let's see if we can try that again.
Allow him to share.
I'm sorry.
I have made you a co-host now, Stephen. Sorry, so you should be able to share if you could please try that again.
Okay, great.
There you go.
Okay, so can we see my hand moving around the screen here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is our first scenario. We just did a ramp addition with a valuation of $2,500. We came up with a permit price of $276.93. And for a permit this is going to be fall under one of our over-the-counter permit projects. So something like this, if you get your information turned in, it's going to get completed within the same day, up to 7 days at the longest. We have that back to you, but it's likely that it would come in with the same day that we'll get it back to you and approved. And basically, out of that valuation, the things that triggered just for a ramp addition would have been the valuation right here, the $2,500, which triggers the permit fee of $114. And then this $74.10 is a plan review check fee, which is calculated 65% of that permit fee. And then there's a fire plan check fee that goes into every permit that goes for the fire department reviews and just the things that they do for inspections and review for their part of what they put in. And that's 24% of the total value fee for the structural permit and the structural plan check. And then there's the community development fee, which is going to be 1.2% of the valuation of any project. And I've crossed this engineering fee out because that's only going to apply on new construction. Not an alteration or small item like this. It would have to be something like the addition that we're going to see on the last example. And then there's this state surcharge, which is 12.5% of whatever the total fees are for the structural on that. So that's our first example. The next example, we've got a ramp addition with a bathroom remodel, roll-in shower, new water closet, which is a toilet, a lavatory, which is a sink, an alteration addition of four electrical circuits and a mechanical exhaust fan, valuation of $25,000, which is pretty high. you know, I would hope he could get something done like that done for, you know, $10,000 to $15,000, but we went ahead and just put in a $25,000 valuation. And for this scenario, we're looking at a $1,278.42 permit. And we're looking at the same type of a turnaround, 1 to 7 days on this. And if you guys want, I can come back and go over these fees, but I for the most part, we kind of covered it on that first one, how they're all triggering. But if we've got questions at the end, we can come back and go over all those.
Sorry to interrupt, Stephen, but is there a way that you can full screen your screen so it looks a little bigger on our end? Because we're seeing everything.
They're really small.
We're seeing all the two bars.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's see what I can do here. And you can always, if you want, you can follow along on the presentation because everything's going to be the same on the presentation if it's easier to see, but I'll see what I can do here to help that out.
Maybe under view, there's a Zoom.
I can Zoom right here. That's, here we go.
That's great.
Thank you.
Is that better? Okay. Let's back up here. Okay, so here's the $25,000 valuation and we came up with a permit fee of $1,278.42. And we should be able to get this one done either same day, but within 7 business days as well. And here's the screenshot of that permit there. Basically shows the valuation fee right in here. And these are all inputs right here. And then these are going to be the prices for each of them. And each of the inputs are, so basically the input for the structural permit fee is the $25,000. That's how we come to that fee. And then that 294 kicks over here for the plan review because it is 65% of this figure. Fire plan check is going to be at the 24% of the combination of these two. So it's actually, this one should have a cross through it as well. And then community development fee, same thing. It's got the full $25,000 valuation at the 1.2%. Engineering, we cross that out because it's just an alteration. It's not going to be affected. And then the rest of these are just line items for the different individual mechanical fees. So for a bath fan, it's $20. However, we do have a minimum mechanical fee of $75, so it's going to get captured with the difference. So the 20 plus the 55 right here, which is the 75. And then there's the state surcharge there. So you get the $9, which is the 12%, 12 to 12.5% of that. And then each of these individual plumbing fees, they're all going to be $20 a piece as well. But then there's also the minimum plumbing fee of $75. So that's where this $15 right here comes in, which makes up for the additional 15 that didn't get captured for those three fixtures. And then right here is your total of the $1,278.42. So that's how all that comes together. Moving along to our third scenario here, we figured we'd do a ramp and then two full bathroom remodels coming in at $50,000, which again is a pretty inflated price. I hope nobody's going to have to pay that much for that. But like I said, it's just to get us just a higher estimate on the permit fee. So we're not underestimating it. Total permit price for the $50,000 valuation and the two full bathroom remodel is going to be the $2,058. This one also will be a quick turnaround, a 1 to 7 day turnaround. And here's the screenshot for all those fees. Our last scenario, we went ahead and did an addition, master bathroom and bedroom, 500 square foot addition. And this one's going to trigger some additional fees outside of what those other permits are going to trigger, such as systems development charges. Anytime you add square footage, there's a fee that's associated per square foot that goes to the engineering department. that we collect for them as part of the permit fee. And that's kind of broken down in one of these handouts at the end here. So the permitting price for this $80,000 valuation is $3,268 for the scenarios that we put forth in the previous slides, but then this additional $2,962.25 are additional fees outside of building permit fees, such as the system development charges for the water and sewer services connections, also for impervious surfaces for the storm drain connection. And then there's the CETs, which is the school tax that goes at a rate of $1.07 per square foot. And so you're coming to a total of $6,230.25 for this 500 square foot addition with an $80,000 valuation. And our permit turnaround for something like this is going to be more like a 2-day to 3-week, depending on the level, I guess, of the structural portion of it. So there's a two-part, getting a planning approval. Our planners have to look at it with the site plan and make sure that it meets all the planning requirements. The lot's not covered too much with the impervious surface. And then they're also going to be looking at solar setbacks. So if it's still a pretty basic plan, we could probably, this type of project is going to be kind of on the line of whether it fits into our over-the-counter plan review or whether it goes into our full review service, which can be up to 3 weeks. So that's why we put 2 days to 3 weeks on this project. And as we scroll down, we can see that 3268 is all these permit fees that we've gone over, how they're all calculated. And then these are the other system development charges, the SDCs, and then the school excise tax. And you can see how they're broken down. For the water, 500 square foot at the rate that they apply at. And then same thing, it's all square footage for all these fees at the whatever the rates that they have set forth. And then their total rates are the $2,962.25, which when you combine the two, take us to the $6,230 for that permit fee. So we've also included the over-the-counter permits, kind of what that program's all about and what we require for submittals. And then there's also the residential building permit application checklist. So you'd be filling both of these out with your project. And then this flyer right here talks about SDCs, how they're calculated, and give you a general idea for what the price is going to cost you per square foot of a home. And this sheet right here is, this one's going to be for a new single family residence based on square footage over here. And this table was updated. You'll see down here at the bottom, it was updated in last year, June 30th, 2020. And it's also got a breakdown of how, you know, the fees for the excise tax, the community development and engineering fees, how they're applied based on the valuation at those percentages. And you'll see these numbers are a little bit higher based on that 500 square foot right here, because it was an addition and it's not going to trigger the transportation or the parks. And I think that's pretty much what it's not going to include. And that's why it was a little bit of close to $2,000 less on that fee. So that is pretty much my presentation on this. So I can be open for taking questions at this time for anybody. And let me get your guys' screen back because I lost it. Okay. I see Michael Gardner.
Yeah. So I don't want to be too geeky, but why is there a state fee of 12.5% on any construction?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the Building Codes Division, who is the, basically we have a state building code. And that's going to be for residential structures, for commercial structures, plumbing, mechanical. They oversee everything. And it's so our building, our building codes, they're not just Ashland specific. So we're pretty much the supposed to be the same across the state. Planning, you know, is going to, when you get, you can get adopted ordinance that, that can tweak things a little bit, but for the most part, it's going to be very consistent. They'll actually tell us, you know, things that we can adopt and what we cannot adopt outside of what the code is. So basically they have a governing body, and they think that they need to charge that much amount of money for all the permit fees to offer the services that they offer.
Sure. That makes sense. Go ahead, Mike. Michael?
Yes, I'd like to ask.
Sorry, I don't.
Mike Hirsch is my name. Yes, I'm Michael. A member. I use Mike, please. Anyway,
Mike.
My concern is this. Most of the seniors live in older homes in Ashland. Before you do any of these access and changes to make the house more livable and better for seniors, does the city give a free home evaluation for the capability to take some of these changes? Sometimes you can go into a house and say, oh, I'm going to put in a new bathroom. And when you start to look at it, it means you're going to have to restructure the area where the bathroom goes because the house is so old, it isn't going to take the change.
Sure.
So what do we do for seniors that's special for seniors to make the evaluation of the house relative to being able to be modified at the prices you talked about possible?
So Mike, unfortunately, we can't do any consulting. We can't go in and take a look and offer advice or consult or anything like that. All we're able to do is review what plans are submitted to us to make sure that they are code driven.
Yeah, but what could we as a senior advisory board do to change the rules so that at-risk seniors could get some free consulting before they start this program?
Boy, that's...
Because that's where it's at. I mean,
sure.
Sometimes I see a ramp come out of a house in my neighborhood and all, and the person really can't use it because the sidewalk's so terribly broken up that if you came down the ramp, you couldn't ride on the sidewalk.
You know,
and a lot of the houses have structural deficiencies, and those need to be made before you put in the new bath.
Right. So as far as what the city can do for you, I'm sorry, but I don't have a good answer for you on that. All I can tell you as far as the process that, you know, that we deal with currently, would be you'd have to hire a professional to go in there and evaluate it for you to tell you, you know, what the best scenario is going to be for you and the best approach. So that, unfortunately, that's all I have for that question.
Yeah, I would say, Mike, that question probably would be directed to someone like the director of community development. You know, like it's kind of a larger question that would ultimately, to be honest with you, have to come probably to city council to basically change an ordinance that says, you know, we're going to either give a discount to senior citizens for planning purposes or somehow offer, you know, detailed construction advice. You know, I'm not sure. I mean, I understand your question, and I'm not belittling the question. I'm just saying it's probably something that if we wanted to pursue it as a committee, we would probably direct it to, to Bill Molnar or someone along that line.
But when you're concerned about safety and all and trees in the ground, the fire department comes out and gives you a free evaluation, tells you what you need to do to make the place safer so you can run out of your house in a fire, and why can't other major organizations in the city do the same thing, especially for seniors in need? Maybe the senior has to qualify to be under a certain income situation. But we got a lot of seniors who are going to wind up getting what's supposed to be a pretty simple bathroom modification, and then the guy goes into the wall and he finds out that the beams are all rotten, or some of the beams are rotten. We need some sort of a support structure to give at-risk seniors, in fact, at-risk individuals, some sort of a pre-action analysis or evaluation.
Topic for the future for us.
Let me interject to say that there's an organization called Rebuilding Together. It was initially started by Sharon and Howard Johnson. It's since expanded and does deal with home modifications to facilitate aging in place. And they have gotten some significant grants recently, and actually are on board to get some more. And they may have the capability to do some of the things you're suggesting, Mike.
We have them come to our next meeting?
Maybe not our next meeting, but we could certainly do that. And actually, I see that Connie Saldana is on the call and has been really active with the lifelong housing movement, and I'm sure could offer some information about this whole area as far as where the advice and analysis and assessments might come into play.
Well, I was going to suggest the Rebuilding Together also. I don't know that they actually do the structural assessment that you're talking about, and I know exactly what you mean, people falling through their bathroom floors and whatnot. But also, the county offers a loan program for remodeling homes that are falling apart, and you access that through the housing authority. So, but I think that house would have to be out in the county, not in the city of Ashland. I think it's a good idea that this be investigated. I think it is a true issue. And if the city could do something, that would be awesome.
Another point. Anne, go ahead.
I have had a couple of other questions. One of them is, you know, we have a lot of sensitivity with the budget process recently about revenue. And I just wondered Stephen, if you could comment on whether the fees that are collected for these permits, how, to the extent to which they underwrite the cost of this department, because it seems like it would add up to a considerable number. I just wondered if, you know, there's actually some advantage to the city of these fees in terms of supporting employee cost.
Right. So good question. Building departments, they're actually one of the departments that the city has. It's actually a requirement, and it's statute that building departments do exist, whether they're ran by the city or they're taken over by the state or another local authority. And they do have requirements that they want to see, you know, that a building department's fees will cover their costs, and they're also supposed to cover a little in addition, so that way in bad years they have a little bit of a, you could say, a slush fund, I guess, to offer the services at a consistent level for maybe when we do go through like an 08 depression or something like that, where the money's just not coming in, but you still need to provide the services for that. So I don't know if that covered everything, but there's some statutes out there that go into depth on the building departments and how they're supposed to be ran and where the fees are supposed to be allocated. Like if there's an excess, it's not supposed to go to the general fund. It's supposed to be in a reserve fund that stays with the building department so that they can continue to operate in future years.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Steve? I had a quick one. If you change an exhaust fan in a bathroom, are you supposed to get a permit?
You are. Yes, you are. Okay. Yep. It would be an electrical, mechanical.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you would probably normally see contractors coming in, going through the permitting process and not the homeowners. Is that true?
You know, on these smaller projects, it all depends. You know, it's very variable. But for these, I don't know if a homeowner's wanting to be involved in the process to save some of those general contracting fees, mm-hmm. they can do that. You know, if they wish. So we see both.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can help a homeowner through the process.
Yeah, we tend to spend more time, you know, with folks that aren't doing it every day, yeah. you know, and so we try to spend more time and walk them through the process and do what we can to help get you to the finish line.
Yeah. Well, good.
Yeah, and Mike, those are good questions that you had. You know, I'm sorry I didn't have good answers for you on that but part of that too, I think there's a lot of liability that would go into what you're suggesting. There could be, you know, if anything, maybe you could talk about the reduced permit fees for seniors or something like that we'd have to get into our fee schedule and process on that. But as far as us going out and doing an evaluation, I think that'd probably get into some liability issues as well. I mean, we could come out and give you some ideas as far as what kind of permits you're going to need, but we can't give you any advice. And you're right. Who knows what's behind those walls or under that floor? And so that's kind of, there are unknowns that can be risky. And at that point, having a professional that you're hiring to evaluate that for you. Yeah. Is going to be the best path for that. And if you do have any programs out there that Connie and Ann were mentioning, do whatever you can to figure what's out there and help get that support.
Hey, well, we appreciate you taking the time to come visit with us today. I'm assuming that Natalie and Eileen, you might have captured some of the questions that Mike Hirsch had, and we can definitely discuss that moving forward. So once again, Steve, thanks for coming to our meeting today. We appreciate your time.
Okay, thanks for having me.
All right, thanks a lot. Okay, next on our agenda will be parking at the Senior Center and the impact of the Walker Elementary School parking plan. And I think we're going to allow Director Black to join us and give a presentation. This is follow-up to at our last meeting. There was a request to give us some information update on this process. So
okay. All right. Well, thank you. I'm Michael Black. If I haven't met some of you, but I am here to give you a presentation on the impacts that we can expect, or actually I'd put it a different way, probably the changes that we can look forward to with the new plan that's coming forward with Walker Elementary and what's going to be done to mitigate the impacts. We do think that they are mitigated. So I'll just say that right off the bat. So let me just share my screen here. All right. So I'll explain can you see my screen, first of all?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I'll explain all the different colors and everything here in a minute. But here's the senior center right here. You see my little hand there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One second. And then swimming pool, obviously. And then this is Hunter Court. And then we have homes right out here. So what the school district is proposing is to rebuild Walker Elementary School, or the majority of the school, I think, is to rebuild it. They're going to leave some of the newer portions there, but all of these dark gray portions will all be additions that the school district is planning. Now, they're not really expanding the school's square footage very much. They're just rebuilding it. And they aren't doing this because of an increase in students or anything like that. They're doing this because the building is older, and they just got a bond approved through the voters to do this on a number of their buildings, which I'm sure you've seen farther down the street here and other places that they're doing with other schools. So the areas that we're going to talk about, the potential impacts, are this is the parking lot here, and I've got another video. I'm going to actually show you a different one. Let me just stop sharing here for a second. I think I can show you something that's a little clearer.
Hey, Deborah.
All right, here we go. Sorry about that. All right, can you see the aerial there?
It hasn't come up yet, but it looks like it's working. There it is.
Okay, great. Sorry, that took a second there. Is it up now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So this is an aerial that shows the current conditions at Walker and Hunter. And actually, this is the Walker Elementary School boundary, and this is the Hunter Park boundary. The street Hunter Court is not a public street. It actually is a private street that's part of the park. It was built for the park. So basically what it was built for, that's Holmes Avenue there. And then this is Hunter Court. And what it was built for is access to the parking areas. It was built just to give access to vehicles who were parking at Hunter Park for the swimming pool, the tennis courts, baseball, senior center, and so on. It has never been used for the school, and this proposal had to come through the Parks Commission for the school because it's not a public street. It is a private street, and the Parks Commission has control and management over that. So there also is a walking path up here, which is important next to the railroad tracks, and that we'll talk about in just a minute. But right here, you can see shaded in, you should be able to see the parking lot area. And this is the access point that they're asking for, which is on Hunter Court. So this is the difference between the old parking lot, which is over here and only has access onto Holmes Avenue, and the new plan, which is to access out onto Hunter Court. So never had access to Hunter Court previously. Now they would like to have access to Hunter Court, and that's why we are talking about this. So just going to that other graphic that I showed you a few minutes ago, what we have here is we have several different issues that are addressed with this map here. So we have basically the new school again, and then Hunter Park, and then right over here we have that new parking lot, and here's the access out under Hunter Court. Well, some of the issues that we had with this plan to begin with were, well, you're going to be adding increased traffic on Hunter Court, and it's narrow up towards the senior center. And that's this area right right in here. The purple area is narrow. So there's a chance, you know, that there would be some conflict points there if you're going to have more people coming out, and you potentially could have people turning right and left as they're coming out from the parking lot. And then you've got people coming in at the same time. And it adds just a lot more traffic. So one of the mitigations that we asked for was to widen the street at in front of the senior center. And the reason why we did this is to allow for ingress and egress without affecting the parking. And as everybody knows, the parking on Hunter Court right there is used for handicap parking and general use, and then also specific use and reserved for Food and Friends when they're picking up food, they park right there. Well, we had them widen the street so that there wouldn't be any impact to those parking spaces. So that mitigates the impact there. And we're actually going to have them repave this whole section that's purple too, all the way back to where the street jogs over, where it gets wider, if you will, where parking is on both sides of the street. That they're going to pave all the way down to that point, which I believe is, I think it's 175 feet, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So that mitigates the first issue with parking. There was another issue with lining up these two parking areas, which has already been taken care of. The other issue was pedestrians, and how do pedestrians interact with Hunter Court in this situation? And we, you know, this is probably the hardest thing that we had to deal with on this plan and working with the school district was working with them to get them to do a pedestrian path on their property that connects to the existing central bike path. And I'm not going to go into all the details, but we went back and forth on this a lot. And we held our ground the entire time and said that it's a non-starter if we don't get this dedicated pedestrian path off of Hunter Court. And it was a little disappointing when we saw the traffic report and even the traffic engineer stated that Hunter Court, the actual street, could be used for pedestrian and bicycle traffic for the students. And that just wasn't going to cut it for the parks commissioners or for us on staff. So we pushed pretty hard and told them we're not going to be making any deals unless we get that path. We ended up getting it. It is separate from the street. So we're not guiding kids into the street to walk down and having more traffic and more opportunities for conflict. That just would have spelled disaster. So that's what that orange line is. And that connects all the way down to the central bike path without having to get onto Hunter Court. The yellow area that you see here, these are all the parking spaces that are going to be built for the new school. And all of those parking spaces will be available to Ashland Parks and Recreation and the users of the senior center, the swimming pool, the rest of Hunter Court, the tennis courts or Hunter Park, and anything else we have going on at Hunter Park. We'll be able to use all of these parking spaces free of charge and for the next 50 years. After school hours, during holidays, summer break, things like that. Let's see, there's a lot of other minor details on this, but the major details are there won't be any change to the parking on Hunter Court. We aren't adding any new parking on Hunter Court, but we are widening it. And we're not losing any on the senior center side of Hunter Court. And we're not losing any between here, if you can see my mouse, and here anyways, because on the west side, because there is no parking on this side. The only place we're losing any on-street parking is right at the opening to the parking lot. So there's probably two stalls there that are going to be reduced, but we have that trade-off where we have the cross-parking agreement in here. And then let me just make sure to go through this. We did get the extension of the bike path. We did mitigate traffic on Hunter Court. We do have that cross parking agreement so that we can park back and forth and use their parking lot after hours. We have the cross access agreement, and that's basically for them so that they can access Hunter Court. And then the storm drain issue, which is no longer an issue. So we came up with, I'll just go through this really quick. I'm not going to read these, but this first one here, this is the written agreement that we have, is that we can use the parking lot. The second one is that the school district can use the street. The third one is that path will be a 5-foot minimum width path off of the street, but it's most likely going to be decomposed granite. They apparently are spending all their money on the construction of the school and can't pave the path. But in my mind, you can still have, well, not in my mind, it's an actual fact, you can still have an ADA path and have it be granite. So we're good with that. So the school district's going to widen Hunter Court and make sure we don't lose any parking spaces. And that's it. That's the agreement that we have with them. And I'm happy to answer any questions and go into any more detail if you'd like me to.
I saw Anne's hand up first, and I'll go to Eileen. Go ahead.
I wanted to check and see if there's some way we can reserve that parking adjacent to the senior center on Hunter Court for the use of senior center, because otherwise you could have people who, you know, parents and things like that parking there, and then Food and Friends can't get in, or older, you know, adults that need that adjacent access.
Yeah, so we had actually talked about this, and we being Eileen and I have talked about this, and we talked about reserving all of the spaces from Holmes Avenue down to the pool parking lot. And that is something that we can do on the east side of the street. That is something that we can do. The Parks Commissioners would have to approve it, but there's no reason why we couldn't do that if that's what you're talking about, yeah. In fact, if there was a motion that came out of this, that would even be more helpful to take that to the Parks Commission.
I move that we reserve the spots along Hunter Court adjacent to the senior center exclusively for the use of the senior center. Or certainly at least during the hours that the senior center is operating, and any events that it might be having, which Eileen, you would know more about.
Okay, so.
I'll second it, but I also have a question.
Sure. So the motion is to reserve those spots during the opening operating hours of the senior facility. And go ahead, Sandy.
Well, I just reserving them. Is that meaning, Anne, that you want them handicap spots or just reserved for senior center? Because I would say not handicap.
Right.
I don't think handicap was part of that.
I didn't think it really was, but I thought I should ask.
Right. So I would have a question. How do you enforce that?
Well, being private property, the police department, I have to think about this for a second. Technically, the police department can enforce the rules of the Parks Commission. So they could actually write a ticket if it's a rule that there's no park, that it's just for the senior center. Most likely, we'd probably put notes on people's cars, and then if they violated it a couple times and we noticed, then we would ask the police to get involved. But, you know, I think it's more on the honor system, yeah. Honestly.
So we would just post probably multiple signs down that side of the street.
We definitely would make it clear so that people knew, and we could even paint the curb a different color potentially, or stripe it, or I'm not sure what kind of treatments are available for something like that. But we could make it known that it's different, and that there are different restrictions, and then just ask people to be on their best behavior.
Yeah.
And
okay. Other comments from committee members? Go ahead, Anne.
I just wonder, you know, I see the, or I had seen the middle school traffic on Walker where the parents were coming and, you know, picking up their kids because they can't walk anymore, apparently. And I couldn't tell whether the traffic pattern for picking up Walker Elementary students was going to be the same kind of thing where it really jams up homes at 3 o'clock or, you know, the way it's been on Walker.
I think there's a motion.
Yeah, there is a motion.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But we could ask questions after we vote on it. So this will be a recommendation to the Parks Commission. The motion that's on the floor, just so it's clear, it would be a recommendation to the Parks Commission that we would take up at a future meeting before this construction took place. So any other comments or questions? Is it possible, Natalie, to do like a roll call vote?
Sure. And do you want me to reiterate the motion?
If you have it there, that would be great.
Sure. Move to reserve the parking spots adjacent to the senior center exclusively for senior center patrons, especially during senior center operating hours and events.
Okay.
And I just call on you and then you announce your vote. Sorry, I haven't said that before. Okay. Let me start with Bellegia.
Yes.
Hirsch.
Yes.
Gardner.
Yes.
Johnson.
Muted, but it looks like yes.
Sorry, Deborah.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. Sethinger.
Yes.
Seitz.
Yes.
McNeil.
Yes.
Thank you. All ayes.
Okay. Motion passes. So
I can answer that.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay. So, Ann, to answer your question, the traffic homes isn't changing. So if the traffic is staying the same as far as the number of cars, homes most likely won't change too much, except that before when you came down homes to pick up your kids, I believe you had two choices. You pulled into the old parking lot and then pulled back out and you're back on home, pulled in, picked them up, pulled back out. Or you could drive down Hunter, which a lot of people did, and park on Hunter Court and go across the lawn, pick up your kids and take them back out. So what the route is going to be, and the only change will be that there's going to be a longer queue for people pulling into the parking lot. So they can fit a lot more cars in the queue than previously. So homes might be a little more clear because you can see how long this queue is, even if it's just on their property, it's pretty long. But it may mean that Hunter Court is the one that most likely will mean that Hunter Court is the one that's getting backed up during those hours. And the dash line is the alternative route, and it's not for picking up kids. Picking up and dropping off is the solid line. So yeah, what we're doing here is we're basically going to have the same number of cars. We're just going to have a different route.
Well, I'm just observing that. You know, some of us have a little trouble with parallel parking anyway. And I'm just trying to imagine you've got all these cars going in to get kids. And now, you know, you're coming in, or can you come in if there's a long line of people picking up kids and then parking in those spots adjacent to the senior center?
So can I just address that really quick?
Go ahead and then I'll turn it over to Eileen.
Yeah, so I recognize that. We all recognize that. And that's one of the reasons why we pushed for this walking path, because kids should be able to walk and ride to school. And we should be doing everything we can to facilitate that happening. And in fact, as a city, Ashland being a bike-friendly and walk-friendly city, there are a lot of amenities that help that to happen. I think that was kind of lost in the conversation on one side, and that's why we kept on pushing that. So that we're trying to get it to a situation that makes it more likely for kids to ride their bikes and walk to school. We're definitely not on board with in telling everybody they have to drive. We'd like to see the traffic reduced, but people are going to make their own decisions. Our decision-making process, I think, made it so that there are more decisions and that people for transportation than just driving, and hopefully will make the situation better. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you, don't worry about it, everything will be fine, because most likely it's going to be backed up on Hunter Court during those hours, pick up and drop off. Homes will be a little clearer. Hunter Court will be a little more backed up.
Eileen, did you want to make a comment, and then I'll recognize Steph?
Yeah, a few things. I have a couple things, one on this and a little bit from before that I think is relevant. I think we do want to remember that the school traffic is pretty concentrated, typically in the 8 to 8:30 range. And with our senior center opening at 8:30 and most programs not starting till 9, the good news is that morning drop-off isn't that impactful. Even Food and Friends doesn't have people coming and going. So that's been a nice neighbor thing, but a lot of ours is in between theirs. You know, there is the afternoon time when the kindergartners get out, but fortunately that's a fraction of the school. And even though some seniors are coming and going at that moment, it's probably not the same volume. And then in the afternoon, those who have been on ASAC for a long time, remember when we first tried meeting at 3 and it was really hard to park at that moment in time. So it's pretty narrow. Most of our folks might be leaving a program at 3 or 3:30. So at least they're not trying to parallel park at that moment. But I think the other part of this that is important is seniors have always used the parking farther down from the senior center. And of course, you're welcome to use the pool parking lot as well. We fortunately do have a sidewalk on our side, but I was certainly concerned about seniors who might have gone down and around and been parking on the Walker School side, and then didn't have a way to safely cross the street. Michael didn't point out, but he where the crosswalk is. But there's going to be a good crosswalk. I don't know if they're going to raise the crosswalk or otherwise mark it in some good way down there. And that'll be helpful. I just wanted to make sure that not just students, but also seniors had a safe side to walk on until they got to the crosswalk where they were highly visible and could cross safely over to our side. So it definitely works both ways, and also the parents who were dropping their kids on the other side. I do think it'll help a little bit to have that signed, as you just voted to recommend, on our side. But I'm almost certain that parents will be doing a quick drop there. I'm not as concerned about that as what happens in the afternoon. And if we have to have staff go out there and teach them that for a while, great. But it may also just be that those spaces are full, because what won't be happening is some of the longer term parking that sometimes happens won't be blocking those spaces, and our patrons will be filling those during the day. And at 3 o'clock, the parents will have to go elsewhere. So I have a feeling it'll work itself out, mostly on the honor system. That's my thinking.
Great, thanks. Steph, go ahead.
Well, I'm kind of wondering, are there going to be any buses?
The buses will enter off of Walker Street, and they'll go in. They won't ever come down Holmes or Hunter Court.
I guess I'm just wondering about flexibility for the senior center in terms of if they want to expand hours or things change. There's some flexibility to that.
You know, I think the parking issue, if we can sign the parking spaces on our side of Holmes, I just think that probably answers most of the questions. You know, either I'm not Holmes, I mean Hunter Court, because people already, patrons of the senior center already park on Holmes Street. I mean, I would say that's probably majority where people park, but now there'll be spaces available down Hunter Court as well. I don't know the particular number, but I'd say there's probably at least 6 or 8 or maybe even 10.
Probably around 10.
Yeah, 10. You know, and then, you know, when I delivered food and friends, I mean, I always parked up on the school parking. Yeah, I just parked on their lawn because, you know, it would be packed in there, you know. So I think the expansion of the street is probably going to be a benefit that we won't really realize until it happens. You know, it's going to be an extra lane wide. There won't be as much conflict there. I think it'll be easier to parallel park. That's just my opinion. Go ahead, Anne.
What about the construction process? I mean, this isn't going to happen just like that. And so during that probably a little bit chaotic time where they're in the process of widening the street and things like that, I've got some concerns about that. And then what happens if and when we actually do the pool construction and the ingress into that area for construction vehicles and things like that, is that going to be a problem relative to the school?
Yeah, you know, so the school will be a little better on the senior center than the pool will be, obviously, because it's a little farther away and it's contained on its own property, except for the widening of the street. So when they mobilize and they start their work, which they haven't got planning permission yet, that's coming up next week, or at least there's a hearing next week. When they get started, they're going to be on their property most of the time until, I don't know the schedule yet, but the only thing they need to do on our property is widen the street, put in a new curb on their side, and repave the street and then add the crosswalk. So it's compared to everything that they have to do, that portion's really small. I don't know the timeline just yet, but the full timeline for construction is 2 years. And during that time, though, there won't be any pickup and drop off in the morning or afternoon. It'll just be construction traffic in the morning coming and construction traffic leaving. And then it's a big enough property that they'll be self-contained once they get into the gate. You know, they're not going to be parking on the street and things like that, I don't think. So when we do the pool, it's going to be a much different scenario, and we'll have to talk a lot more when we get to that point, because it'll be much more impactful. So
is there a timeline on the pool?
Oh, I wish there was a timeline on the pool.
Starts tomorrow.
That was supposed to be done last year, I think.
Whenever, consistent with one of the
probably, you know, it's hopefully in the next few years we will have a timeline developed and maybe even start construction.
And find
the money to do it and all kinds of stuff.
By then we'll know, we'll have adjusted to this change before
That's
we get
right.
to the pool. Yeah. One at a time.
I think this change will actually, with what the school district agreed to, I think the change will be favorable to the senior center. That's my opinion. I mean, there'll be construction conflicts for a short period of time, but you know, overall, I see it as being not being a negative, but probably more a positive.
Hear, hear.
If that street widened before we start the pool project is really what the good part is. Okay, well, I guess we should move on. Thank you, Director Black, for presentation. I think we have a good recommendation to send on to the commission, and hopefully we'll solve some future parking woes with the recommendation. So
great.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate
You're welcome.
It. Next is my most favorite part, elect vice chair for 2021-22. I actually don't have any information on this at all. Unless somebody raises their hand and says that they would like to be vice chair for the next year. Otherwise, my suggestion is that I know for a fact I'm going to be at the September meeting, so we don't have to worry about someone chairing the meeting then. And maybe current and even future members would consider the position of a vice chair to jump in at a moment's notice to make sure that the meetings run smoothly and create tremendous agendas and get work done. That's my speech. Go ahead, Eileen.
I think Anne had mentioned a willingness to at least be an interim vice chair just to back you up if there was a meeting you couldn't chair. Is that still true, Anne, reluctantly?
Reluctantly.
Okay.
Well, I could do it too, and I'm not too.
That's true. And actually, you're better at it.
Well, I don't know about that, but I would be willing to.
Yeah. That would be good.
So we'll have Sandy as sort of interim vice chair just to back Mike up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the goal, and we might discuss this as we go to the next item, is to have somebody that's committed to being able to help out and chair a meeting or create an agenda if needed. It's an important role.
Chairing this group is not as difficult as chairing some other groups. I mean, it's really not a very difficult thing to do. At least that was my experience in starting out.
Okay, well then, can I just appoint her as interim vice chair? Or do we need a vote?
I don't think we account for that in our bylaws about interim.
So, Sandy, if you're willing to do that, let's just...
Sandy seems to be the vice chair for the committee.
I think she's agreeing to interim stuff, not the full-on. Is that right, Steph or Sandy?
Well, I'm hoping somebody, because... I mean, what we're talking about, usually it's been that person is the chair the next year. Mm-hmm. I frankly would like to see somebody new do that because I've done it. And if worse came to worse, I have one more year after this anyway, and then I'm off. So I think it would be good for the group to have somebody who's newer do it. But in the interim, I will.
So we'll just appoint Sandy to the interim vice chair. And
I'll withdraw my question.
Thank you. when we get into new member recruitment needs, I mean, that obviously would be a need that we have is to hopefully get some new members that, are willing to, take a little more responsibility and move, and managing meetings and helping Eileen create agendas and whatnot. So, okay. So we can stay on a timeline. I'm going to move on to item number 8, which is new member recruitment needs. And I'm going to turn that over to Anne and Eileen. I don't know which one wants to start off, but... You're muted, Ian.
So I think one of the things that we've been pursuing in recruitment is it's kind of twofold. I mean, we have a sense of wanting to represent a broader cross section of Ashland residents, and in concert with the city's race and social inclusion and respect and all of those good goals. We also have the goal of ensuring a good representation of seniors in Ashland, and particularly those who really understand senior issues. It's a complex area. There are a lot of resources available, and it takes some time to become familiar with them and to be a good advocate for senior needs. So it's not as if the two things are in conflict, but pursuing them both is something that we've been trying to do. And we've made outreach to several candidates that would meet our diversity goals. And we've had the addition of Deborah, who certainly meets the idea of having knowledge about senior issues. So we're kind of pursuing both of those two goals with these two open positions. And we have some interest possibly from Connie's, she's like invisible here now at this point in time. But anyways, that that would be a wonderful addition. And so I guess we're inviting other ASAC members to be mindful of those two goals and to make recommendations of candidates that we might encourage to apply. And actually, I've also reached out to Gina Duquesne and several times actually to ask her for some recommendations of individuals who might actually ideally fit both of those goals, be a senior, be representative of a diverse group of individuals in Ashland. So I don't know if anybody has any other ideas on this. I think I'm sort of an informal recruiter. So certainly if you want to forward any ideas to me, I'd be glad to pursue them.
Go ahead, Eileen, and then I'll turn over to Steph.
I'm glad Anne mentioned herself as an informal recruiter. Informal, but very good, let me tell you. She's really been on it in the last year. And, you know, not everybody's decided to join, but it's definitely enriched our process. And I just want to remind people that we've done much better with personal outreach. And so if you do have an idea and you can connect Anne, maybe an email to Anne and myself and Mike. We're kind of the informal trio. We always involve our chair with the recruitment. It has worked much better if we really reach out to people rather than just do lots of broadcasting PSA kind of stuff, because it's awkward to turn someone away who isn't really meeting the goals that we've stated. You know, with our last couple of seats, we really want to be mindful who we bring on. So it's better to float ideas and then reach out personally.
Mm-hmm. Steph, did you have a comment?
The same comment.
Okay, great. So just to clarify, any members that had eligible recruits, I guess we'd go either through Anne or Eileen probably to get the ball rolling. And because I just want to make sure it was clear, you know, it's a little awkward sometimes if you just bring someone to a meeting. It's kind of better if we can do some informal interviewing, I suppose, you know, or just some communication to make sure that the goals of the committee are clear, and you know, and then see what the goals of the, you know, potential applicant might be as well. So, any other questions or comments on this topic? Go ahead, Eileen.
I should add, I got it out of order in your package, but I did give you a renewed version of who's currently in what role and what their expiration, their term date is, and then the vacant position. So right now we're looking to recruit people. They'd have, just to keep our term rotation going, we're suggesting that anybody new that comes on essentially comes on for that they'd end June 20 of 22, and hopefully really what they'd be doing is renewing right then, just so we'd keep in rotation. I saw, Jackie was saying goodbye.
Yeah, just leave.
Okay. Comment. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions of Anne or Eileen or myself? Okay. Well, let's move on so we can hopefully wrap everything up in the next 15 minutes. I'm going to forgo APRC update. I think the important things that were discussed were Michael Black's presentation. And unless there's any specific questions from anyone about anything that's with the goings on of APRC, I'd be glad to answer them. But otherwise, I think I would turn it over to Steph and give us any council updates that would be appropriate for this group.
Sure. Hopefully you all received information on the evacuation zones, and has everyone gotten that?
Mm-hmm. I have.
And so that's one big thing that's been done. Right now we're interviewing for interim city manager positions. We have one applicant that I know of, and we will be hopefully filling that position before August 1st or August 6th when Adam is leaving that position. We're also looking for city attorney positions. We've hired Katrina at this point as an interim, and we've named the fire chief, Sartain. He was the code officer, I think, before, or he's now the permanent fire chief. So those are some of the major things that have occurred in the council. The good things, anyway. Any questions?
Any questions for Steph? Go ahead, Mike.
I'm a regular reader of the Ashland Tidings. Is what I read in the Ashland Tidings anywhere near the truth?
I would say it is.
Okay. I got my news.
I would agree with that too. Okay, any other questions for Steph? Go ahead, Ann.
I would just say that I thought the analysis in the sneak preview was quite even-handed, and so that was another resource for what's going on.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Steph. Education report from Natalie.
Thank you. So we are persisting with one last Zoom presentation on August 25th, co-presented Alzheimer's Association on, it's called Dementia Conversations, Driving Doctor's Visits and Life and Financial Planning, how to, you know, start that conversation in a family when some decisions need to be made. So unfortunately, it's still been a struggle this summer to get people engaged with us on Zoom. So we had planned this last one, and I think tentatively are hoping to go back to in-person presentations in our fall season, but obviously we'll be cautious in planning that and may just have a Zoom backup for any in-person presentations. But another exciting development in the education programming is that we are partnering with the Jackson County Library System to offer some on-site computer labs for older adults as part of the goal of promoting digital literacy for seniors. So you may have seen that the library just got a new mobile tech van called the DART van. I'm not sure what the acronym is, I apologize, but so their mobile services specialist will be coming down here and has laptops and tablets that seniors can use. She'll be in our activity room so she can use our big screen TV. But then it's basically a computer class for older adults. So we have a pilot on the 18th of August and then two sessions in October and two sessions, sorry, in September, two in October. And hopefully it's something that might be
an ongoing long-term thing rather than just having a one-on-one tutor. So that's, we're excited about that. And that's the education. I think there might be some questions or?
Any questions for Natalie? Thumbs up.
Okay, thanks.
I have another comment.
Yes, go ahead.
We do have a committee working on Pioneer Hall and the community center to see if we can do a quicker, more financially feasible way of opening those two buildings sooner than later.
Yeah, sooner than later. Okay. Thanks for that update, Steph. Eileen, you want to give us a report?
Thank you. As always, you have my more extensive report in the package. I think there's just a couple things I want to call out. One is that Natalie and I are really excited that we are expanding our Senior Phone Buddy program. We're calling it Ashland Senior Phone Buddy, little to make sure it's distinct from some of another program in the county and the thing that AARP does. But we are really excited to build that into a bigger long-term program to basically meet our goals of increasing social contact and reducing isolation and loneliness among seniors. We are doing a training for that on, we actually set two different dates. Because we wanted to have two smaller groups. It's our first time through. We're doing one on July 28th, a Wednesday, and another on August 21st. If you know of anybody, it's a great opportunity. Really, we would accept any age adults. We're not quite set up for minors that would need more supervision, but we would welcome even an adult who wanted to make the call with children or youth with them. That could be a cool model as well. And the training is, I think we've got it at about 6 hours. Is that where we landed? Something like that. So it's not a full day, but it's a pretty good day of training. And I would just ask that if anybody is interested, you send them our way. Natalie's our lead on that, but they can just send their questions straight to our main number and our senior info at ashland.or.us. You all should have gotten something that you can send out to your networks, and I hope you thought about it. And it's one of a few opportunities in our county that could be done all by phone. So it works for anybody who's homebound themselves. And we are definitely welcoming actually some of the same people who were in the program before have enjoyed it and want to come in as a volunteer and learn a little bit more and be a consistent support for someone else. So as you might recall, our prior program was a peer program, and this is a volunteer program. People make the calls through an online server that thanks to another organization's grant, they've been able to make available to other agencies and a confidential server. And that allows us to collect data. And one of the things I'm most excited about is that we will be able to see if somebody's falling through the cracks. So if the volunteer isn't keeping their commitment, we'll see that those calls aren't being made and we can talk to them or reassign that person. And that's what was really missing with our peer-to-peer model that we scrambled together at the beginning of COVID, is that only some people got the call. And that wasn't good enough when people are isolated. So we're really excited about that change. The other million-dollar question is, when is the Senior Center reopening? And I want to let you know that today was our first day having the office open, now Monday through Thursday from 10 to 12. But Natalie and I have made an evaluation, and we decided we would start bringing programs back in a stepwise fashion, with September being the more complete back to most services. I don't know yet whether Food and Friends will be back at that point, because they have some stronger rules that they're going with. They have more specific guidance from the state. The state pretty much rolled everything back and didn't tell us anything specific for senior centers, which personally, I was a little uncomfortable to dive immediately back into full everybody back in the building. And, you know, I think we still don't know where our pandemic is going, and we have a vulnerable population. So bringing things back a little bit at a time, starting with some one-on-one activities that doesn't bring masses of people in. We're planning to start computer tutoring and our free access to the computer room. We'll start next Monday. And then we'll stepwise it back with some other things. It also gives staff a chance to kind of get the kinks out, make sure we're still doing some sanitizing, but we have no requirements now for masks or for distancing. That the state has rolled all that back, and it's hard for us to impose a higher bar than the state, but all along we've been able to blame it all on the state level, you know, that we're just following public health guidelines. If we do something different than public health guidelines, we no longer have a strong defense for that, you know, even though some of us may personally feel that. What we are going to say is that masks are recommended indoors. We are not going to enforce that, but we do need to let people know we're not checking vaccinations. APRC and the city doesn't want to be in that business of verifying people's personal information that way. But people at a card game can ask each other if they're vaccinated and decide whether they want to sit at a table together, you know. So that's some of what we're dealing with. We will be announcing in the August senior news the more specifics of that. I'm not going to take more time, but I'd like to just see if there's any questions before we move on in our last 3 minutes here.
Any questions for Eileen?
That's good. We're being restrained with our questions now. Yeah. We're running out of time.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to item number 10, which is a couple items, updates from the group. First, we have an update on the Ashland Emergency Food Bank from Mike.
Hi. Well, starting July 19th, vaccinated customers and volunteers will be required to wear masks. That's starting July 19th. And we don't check, we'll never be checking vaccination cards. So if you feel comfortable wearing a mask starting July 19th, you can. If you don't want to wear one, you don't have to from that day on. The big thing is that the board is going to go on retreat in September to discuss return to customer shopping mode. I don't know whether you guys know how the food bank used to work. People would come in and shop as if they were in a 7-Eleven, and somebody would go with them and fill a basket. Now they fill out a piece of paper, we shop for them, and they don't come in and mingle with everybody there. Hopefully that means that by October, we'll be back to the old shopping mode. One of the concerns is not COVID, but real smoke from forest fires. And the food bank has now gotten a bunch of N95 masks. And for volunteers and staff, they're going to be providing them. I was wondering if the senior center still has that old stack of N95s in case of an emergency. Mm-hmm. Okay. As far as money is concerned, the food bank's got lots of food and lots of money, lots more than the people who are showing up to get it. Huge amounts of food to Uncle Food's Diner. We're delivering to Phoenix a couple, three times a week, and fire rescue, and putting food in mini food boxes around the city. So yes, we got tons of food. If you know people who need it, we're doing more and more home delivery. In fact, I did one now to a woman in my neighborhood. We probably delivered to 30 or 40 people once or twice a month, food boxes, just as if they were coming in to get it. So that's a lot of good food going out, and we still got tons of food left.
Great. Thanks for everything you do with that, Mike. That's a great community service.
Sorry, can I ask a quick clarification, Mike? You said starting July 19th, vaccinated visitors and volunteers will have to wear masks.
No, we'll not have to wear masks.
Right now, we are,
all of us are wearing masks, and we're asking visitors to please mask, but we're not going to go to fisticuffs if they refuse. But starting the 19th, the rules will go down to you want to, you can. If you don't want to, you don't have to. Because if we don't, we can't, we're not going to ever check, show me your vaccination card. That's just not the way we operate.
Okay, great. Any other questions for Mike? Okay, thanks, Mike. Sandy, do you have an update on livable action?
Well, we're out of time, so I'll keep this real short. Last time I talked about what we had proposed and how we would operate, and we are continuing to do that, seeing ourselves as kind of a clearinghouse and idea board of those people and groups that are represented. And at our last meeting, it was a good example of that. Some ideas came forward that probably wouldn't have if those groups or people had not been present. So that's kind of working. I think it's working well. We'll continue with that kind of a format, and I'll keep it at that for now.
Great. Thanks, Sandy. Any questions quickly for Sandy? Okay. Other items? I'm just going to interject this right now. At the end for our next meeting, in person or Zoom, what do we want to do?
The next meeting is in August?
September.
September.
13th.
Oh, in person. I vote in person.
Any other comments?
I hate these Zoom things.
Person?
In person.
Okay. I think that would be a majority. So I just wanted to clarify that so we didn't leave it hanging. So we'll plan on the September 13th meeting to be in person at the Senior Center.
And I'd like to say, conditions permitting.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, if things change, we'll stick with Zoom. But if we're open at the Senior Center, we can have it there.
Yeah. And let's hope a couple months from now we'll be in better shape. So that'd be good. And I think that probably the best thing out of Zoom is it is a fallback option now that, you know, we didn't have a year and a half ago because nobody knew how to do it, but I guess we know how to do it now. So.
What I don't have is an easy way to do a joint one, you know, where some people are on Zoom and some people are on in person, but it looked like everybody but Anne was voting that they want to be in person, and Anne was willing, if I'm reading this right.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the city and APRC as well, there's really almost no way to do a both. You can't do it both ways. You kind of have to do it one way or the other. Otherwise, it's just really complicated and usually compromises one side or the other, depending on, you know, if you're just listening in or if you're actually in the room. So let's go with, we'll go with plan A, which is hopefully we'll be able to meet in person on September 13th. And anything else from the group? Any other comments, questions? Okay. Well, good. This was a good meeting. I think we got a lot of information. We took some notes on some of the information that came from the community development, and hopefully we can incorporate some of those into an agenda item for maybe even the next meeting. But then I look forward to seeing you all in a couple months, if not sooner. So
thanks, Mike.
Thank you for joining us, Connie.
Oh, thank you. It was good to hear what goes on this commission.
Okay.